Uzodinma Iweala is another writer recently named by Grunta magazine as one of America's 21 best writers under 35. Uzodinma Iweala lives in two worlds. One, America, the place where he was born and raised. The other, Nigeria, the place his parents are from, where he often visits. Both places are part of him, but neither fully. It's with this conflict that Uzodinma Iweala writes. His debut novel is called Beasts of No Nation. It's a story told from the perspective of Agu, a child soldier in an unnamed African war.
When I first started reading about all these things, I was, you know, it was about World War II and whatnot, and just was interested, in this battle and that battle and this ship and that ship, and oh, how cool, this isn't war, a really interesting sort of technical thing. And then, of course, you get older and you begin to understand what war actually means. That's, you start reading different stories. Rather than the logistics of battle, you start reading about what it means for a family or what it means for an individual. You read accounts of people who've been in, you know, say, for example, concentration camps, or you start to read about conflicts in Africa and you start to talk to people. In my case, I was talking to family members about the Nigerian Civil War, or you talk about sort of all those things and you begin to get this very, very different picture. And when you know somebody or when you've been close to people who have fought or who have been affected by war, as my parents have and my grandparents and aunts and uncles, then I think you start to really look at things in a different way. And you can't just say, all right, well, that's terrible, you know, moving on now. I mean, because people you know were not able to say that's terrible, all right, I'm going to go, you know, and eat my Cheerios or something like that. It was a very different thing for them. And I think that gets passed along through the stories that are told.
Is that what you found yourself doing? Is that the research that you did to create Beasts of No Nation? Did you go find former child soldiers? Well, I mean, you had to become one in a way. I know you can't really, but to write in the first person this way, you have to feel as though the words you're writing are true.
What I did was I really spoke with only one person who I knew was a definite child soldier. And that was China Kitetsi from Uganda. And, you know, I think speaking with her and hearing her speak, that was such an intense experience that I think that provided a lot of the emotional access. But then, of course, I spent a lot of time reading interviews with former child soldiers or child soldiers. Some have written biographies.
So you began to form this character. Would you tell me about him? Agu is his name?
What happens is his village is raided and he becomes disconnected from his father and some of the other men in the village, and then ends up getting picked up on the side of the road by the commandant and the commandant's sort of ragtag troop of soldiers. And I guess for Agu, what it really is, as it is for many, many kids, it's sort of like a forced choice. It's not that you want to become a soldier. You're not signing up to go and fight. But neither are you necessarily running away. And the reason why you're not necessarily running away is because you don't really have very many other options. I mean, if you think about it, what are his choices? In Agu's case, it's either he sits on the side of the road here and he starves to death or something like that. Or he joins this man who tells him that if you stay with me, then I'll be able to give you food. Or I'll be able to make sure there's some sort of security.
Yeah. And then they have to, I suppose, and do turn him into a killer. There's a scene near the front of the book in which he kills for the first time. It's a fairly typical form of indoctrination, I guess.
Right.
Would you read that for us?
Sure. Kill him, Commandant is saying in my ear, and lifting my hand high with machete. Kill him, oh. The enemy is saying to me, please don't kill me, oh, please, I beg, and please, God will bless you. And each time he is talking, he is spraying saliva and blood everywhere. Then he is starting to piss, and he cannot even be stopping himself. See this man, Commandant is saying, look at him. He's not even man. He's just going to toilet like sheep or goats or dog. He's grabbing my neck and whispering into my ear, kill him now, because I'm not having the time, oh. If you're not killing him, eh, lieutenants will be thinking you're a spy. And who can know if he won't just be killing you? He is squeezing my hand around the handle of the machete and I'm feeling the wood in my finger and in my palm. It's just like killing goat. Just bring this hand up and knock him well, well. He is taking my hand and bringing it down so hard on top of the enemy's head, and I'm feeling like electricity is running through my whole body. The man is screaming, "Ayy!" louder than the sound of bullet whistling, and then he is bringing his hand to his head, but it is not helping, because his head is cracking and the blood is just spilling out like milk from coconut. I'm hearing laughing all around me, even as I'm watching him trying to hold his head together. He's annoying me, and I'm bringing the machete up and down and up and down, and just hearing "buddha, buddha" every time, and seeing just pink while I'm hearing the laughing, "kehi, kehi, kehi" all around me. Then I'm hitting his shoulder and then his chest, and looking at how Commandant is smiling each time my knife is hitting the man. Strikai is joining me, and we are just beating him and cutting him while everybody is laughing. It is like the world is moving so slowly, and I'm seeing each drop of blood and each drop of sweat flying here and there. I am hearing the bird flapping their wing as they are leaving all the tree, to sounding like thunder. I am hearing the mosquito buzzing in my ear so loud, and I'm feeling how the blood is just wetting on my leg and on my face. The enemy's body is having deep red cuts everywhere, and his forehead is looking just crushed, so his whole face is not even looking like face, because his head is broken everywhere, and there's just blood, blood, blood.
And it's extraordinary what he does. But I have to wonder, after hearing you read that, after reading it in the book, is he really at that point a killer yet?
See, I guess, I don't know. It's a question. Does killing one person make you a killing machine? I don't know. But I think it surely probably makes it easier to kill again when you realize. Because, you know, I think a lot of these restrictions or lines that we put up are largely just, in a sense, arbitrary. You know, I don't think, what am I trying to say? I think that people think that we are much farther away from being able to do things than we actually are. And you see in a lot of situations, in a lot of contexts, as soon as certain societal constrictions are removed, then it becomes easier for people to do a lot of things. I mean, and so, you know, it's easy enough to sit here in the United States, or for you and me to sit and talk and say that, oh my God, it's a terrible, terrible thing, like, you know, that he's crossed this line, and that, oh, that's so awful, so tragic, we would never do it. And then, of course, you're put in that situation, and then you would find that you might just make the same choice. And I think there are very few people who would actually make a different choice. I think that's the thing. So, and I guess that's part of what I was trying to show in writing, is that both the experience of being a child soldier, I think, and I think that I can say this, is dehumanizing, right? That you've taken this person and you've stripped them of everything and you've made them into this thing that's expendable, right? But also the way that we speak about people in conflict, especially about people in conflict in Africa, is also very dehumanizing. And that's taking away from them, making these people into so much of an other that we think that they're not like us. And in reality, they are. Like, yeah. Everybody, I think, if put in the same situation, we'll have to go through the same sort of thought process. And I think that we managed to convince ourselves that that's not the case.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, I guess, about the point at which Agoub loses his humanity, but then it occurred to me that he doesn't, in a way. There's another scene that I'm going to ask you to read in which he's, you can't call it talking with his friend Strikai, but here's this boy. They've both been killing. They've both been turned into child soldiers. By this time, they've both lost their humanity. And yet, well, maybe the scene speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm finding him sitting under a tree, far away from the other men, holding stick and scratching picture into the dry ground. Over and over again, he is drawing the same picture of man and woman with no head because their head is rolling away on the ground. Strikai, I'm calling to him, and he is looking up at me. No noise from him. He is not saying anything, I'm telling myself. Since I am becoming soldier, I am never hearing the sound of his voice. But now I am knowing what is his problem. His picture is telling me that he is not making one noise since they are killing his parent. I am feeling sad for him. I am getting used to it. This is how he is behaving from the very beginning. Strikai is moving to one side so I can be sitting in the shade next to him. On the ground he is writing hungry, and I am wanting to say to him, I am hungry too. I am hungry too. But the words are not coming out from my mouth. There is no food left for anybody in the camp. Strikai is putting his head on my leg and licking his cracking lip. The blood on them is dry and shiny, making his lip to look like he is swallowing red paint. I am touching his forehead with my hand, and then I am touching my own to be seeing if he is hotter than me, but we are the same hotness. He is not having fever, and I am not having fever. We are just tired.
Agu really does understand that there is a reason Strikai is unable to talk, and I guess it's because humanity refuses to go away.
Right, right. I think that's one of the best ways of putting it, that you cannot completely kill that in anybody. I mean, I think, you know, you look at some of the characters, even the commandant, even lieutenant, who are, in my mind, just totally awful characters, are still human beings, and I think that it doesn't go away. Yeah. And I think it's really important when talking about or writing about or, you know, speaking about war or child soldiers or soldiers in general to understand that you are fundamentally, like, you can't change the fact that you're human, and that when speaking about these people or the situations they're in, that has to be the point from which you start. And I guess that's what I was trying to do when writing, is that no matter how awful it gets or no matter how terrible the things they are that they do, like, they are human beings and they need to be spoken about and acknowledged in that fashion.
Yeah. There's even a little bit of that in the hell that Agu is going through. There's one last reading I'd like you to do, because it suggests that even in Agu's life, there may be a chance of hope.
I'm hearing song. Someone is singing it. It is old song that my mother was singing all the time she is cooking or washing. A song, a song. I'm not even hearing music for so long, not even from bird. Hearing this music is making my whole skin to burn, and I'm wanting to scratch myself, my whole self, all over. I feel like I'm wanting to dance, but is my body even remembering how? I don't think so. I am saddened because of this. What is happening to the music and all the song we are having? I don't know. I don't know. I'm walking faster because I'm trying to see who it is that is singing the song so I can be standing next to him and feeling this music. I'm walking from this person to that person, but I'm not seeing any sort of sound coming from their mouth. I'm feeling like I should be going to that person who is singing and taking all of the sound so I can be having it for myself to be keeping in my pocket for whenever it is getting to be too, too bad. But the sound I am looking for is coming from nowhere. I don't mind at all because the song is making my body to move, and I am not having to think anymore. I am having to think of other thoughts that are just jumping into my head. I'm not even minding the gun that is making my whole back to hurt even though it is very heavy. I'm thinking of home. How many times am I thinking of my home when we are in the bush? How many times am I seeing all the people that I'm growing up with running around in my head like child running around after school, running to the house, running to the church, running to the market, like there is no war and everything is just fine. In my head, all of the people that I am seeing in my home are too, too happy, and I'm thinking, if this is how they are living, why am I staying here? To just be walking to some place, not even knowing if I'm living or dying. I don't know. I don't know.
Uzodinma Iweala's debut novel is called Beasts of No Nation.